Okay, the time is what, 9:02 a.m. on April 7th, 2026, and I am convening this video conference and telephone conference meeting of the Audit Committee of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guaranty Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act and the association's antitrust policy. All information discussed or disclosed is to be used only for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice of the meeting was filed on March 30, 2026, and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of the notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. A quorum is achieved as all three members of the committee are on. Also in attendance is General Counsel Dan Price, Executive Director Bart Bowles, Executive Director-elect Ms. Jan Graber, and Association employees Jarrett Terry, Topping Haggerty, and Brandy Nichols. From Clifton Larson Allen, the audit partner, Bhakti Patel is also in attendance. And it's over to you, Bart.
And there's no one yet attending for the Department of Insurance, and that may change, but we'll go ahead and start with item one, the consideration of the items on the consent agenda, which are the minutes of the April 8th meeting, 2025. Those were distributed to the committee prior to the meeting.
Anyone have any questions or corrections or additions to those minutes? If not, we need to
There's a draft
approve the
motion
res
there
yeah,
on
draft
screen.
resolution here.
Blake, you're muted.
Move to approve.
Second.
All right. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes, Bart.
Okay, moving on quickly, item two. Just take a moment. I want to give you a quick update on where we are on the implementation of recommended remediation steps from the internal and external network penetration testing and the phishing tests that were conducted in January, actually December of 2025 and January 2026. There were a number of findings, and none of them were significant, even though a couple were shown to be in the high category. There were only five findings in an external penetration test. There were 56 specific findings in the internal penetration test. Four of them were reported as severe. We've gone through those with our outside consulting firm, and they were just settings that needed to be changed by the consulting firm. And there were no findings from the phishing test that was conducted. So we're in the final stages of all the remediation steps. When it's concluded, I will add descriptions of the remediation efforts that were implemented by the association into the report. So would you have a good record going forward of what the findings were, what remediation was recommended, and specifically what the association implemented? So there's no action necessary here. It's just reporting to tell you. We are close to being finished with remediation. That'll be the last you hear about these tests. Questions? Okay, we can move on then, Mark, to item three. And this is the report from the auditor.
Ms. Patel and I had an exit conference. No issues to note. Management played nice with the audit partner. So, other than that, I will turn it over to her if she has anything to add.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Bart, I think you were sharing my slides there. There you go.
Let me get it to the beginning.
We
There
have
you
some
go.
a few slides here. I'll keep it short and sweet, but I'm happy to answer any questions as we go. So as Bart introduced me, I'm Bhakti Patel. I am the audit partner with Clifton Larson Allen. I think there's some potentially new faces here, but just to give you some history, I have been the audit partner on this engagement for the last 7 years. This is my seventh year. So while it's a hello, it's a goodbye as well. The under policies, the association has put an RFP out for to identify an auditor. And even if CLA is selected again, I know that evaluation is still happening. I will rotate off as the audit partner because of that 7 year policy. So this will be my last year briefing out the committee. So real quick, just we're not 100% done and issued yet. We wait for board approval to do that, but we have enough to give you the final results of the audit here. So I'm going to run everybody through that real quick. So our overall, I'll go through the scope and our overall process, our final audit opinion, and some of those required communications. And then I have a few financial statement highlights, nothing that should be really earth-shattering or new to anyone. And most of that's discussed at the board meeting. So, but I'll go through a few saw in the financials and what we did around that. And then I'll talk about the engagement finalization too. And I think that's right before the highlights. So our overall scope, we provide a report on the organization's financial statement, which we call our independent auditor's report. We will also, if we identify any internal control deficiencies, whether they rise to the level of a significant deficiency or material weakness, or they're a simple best practice management letter comment, we will provide that in writing. That says NA here. We didn't have anything. We've historically not had anything to communicate there. So that is a required communication should we identify anything, but we didn't identify anything this year. And then our required governance communications here. So overall, the audit, we had audited the financial statements. We do perform in the overall draft financial statements, you'll see those financial statements and footnotes. So we do opine on both of those. We perform limited procedures in the required supplementary information, which is that management's discussion analysis you see in the front. And then we do perform our audit in accordance with U.S. generally accepted auditing standards. We'll propose any adjusting journal entries as needed as we go through. We didn't have any this year. And then once that annual report is ready, we do look at that prior to issuance. We read that. We make sure it's all consistent with those audited financial statements. Work with management to make any changes there on the annual report part of that. So our overall process, we take a risk-based approach. So at the beginning of the audit, we really go through our planning. We have conversations with management. We have what we call our fraud meeting to identify what are the risks. What are the risks that lie with the entity in general? And what are the risks potentially this year? Were there new transactions this year? Were there new pronouncements this year? Things that could cause higher risks. So we look at the overall internal controls of the association. We always look at significant estimates, and I'll go through those here. Some of the areas that we identify that were a significant risk area just because of either the materiality of the dollars there or just from an inherent risk perspective, just because of the nature of that account. We did identify the proofs of claims. It is fully reserved, but it's a pretty large balance there. So that we identify a significant risk. We look at revenue recognition and then the adoption of the new accounting standards, which I'll talk about as well. We had two, and insurance contractual obligations just because of the estimate portion of that. They are long-term estimates, and we perform additional procedures. So around all of these, we performed around the proofs of claims, insurance obligations, and the adoption of new accounting standards. We do a little bit more than we would do if one of those accounts was low risk. So for proofs of claim, we really look at the detail, tie those out. Insurance obligations, we look at what the actuary has provided as well as the detail of to make sure that that was compiled accurately. And the adoption of new accounting standards, I don't think I have another slide, but there was two, GASB 102 and 103. That 102 was effective this year and 103 was early implemented this year. So overall financial statement audit opinion, it was overall unmodified opinion. We didn't identify any material weaknesses, and we don't have any written communications to management. We can keep going. That was just really all there. So our overall governance communications, and I covered a little bit of this already, our significant risk areas that you see here, we do additional procedures as required by auditing standards for those particular areas. Management did adopt GASB 102 and 103 this year. 102 was around certain risk disclosures. While management went through that and looked at it in detail, there was nothing that fell out from that analysis that was identified as needing to be disclosed under those standards. So, and GASB 103 was around the financial reporting entity, and there were significant changes to the management discussion analysis that were pushed through this year. 103 was early implemented by management this year. There wasn't any transactions for which there was a lack of any authoritative guidance. No difficulties, as Mr. Williams pointed out, I briefed out to him last week, no difficulties in performing the audit, no disagreements. Management was responsive and timely to all of our questions. We do take a deeper dive into estimates with higher uncertainty. These are those insurance contractual obligations and that allowance for doubtful accounts, the proofs of claims, mainly because of a degree of potential management bias there. So we look at that and how those estimates are put together and that underlying data to make sure it is accurate. And we are comfortable with those estimates there. One thing we did, and I'll go through in the financial highlights, there were some recoveries this year. So one of the things we did do is go back a few years and look at, okay, is there a trend on recoveries that we should be considering? Didn't identify anything. So we were still comfortable with how management's been doing that over the years. There were no consultations with other accountants on any auditing and accounting matters that we are aware of. There were no matters discussed that was contingent to our engagement. And then at the end of this, we'll have a representation letter signed by management once the board approves the final. I think I just went through that, so we can just skip right over that one. So some quick financial statement highlights. I'm not going to read this in detail. Again, nothing that probably has not already been discussed at length at the board meetings throughout the year, but cash decreased about $9.8 million, mostly due to those policy obligation payments. Those unbilled assessments decreased about $30 million. That was a combination of some estate recoveries, payment of those policy claims, and those assumption payments. And I know those payments were made after year-end, but it still impacted that unbilled assessment account there. And also in that unbilled assessment account, which is not written there, but there was a $3.9 million change that happened, and management changed last year's statements as well. It was a reclassification. It didn't impact net position at all. It took it out of the assets, it took it out of the liabilities. And that was because I believe it was a Southland National insolvency. What the actuary provided to Texas Life Association was incorrect. And so the actuary came back subsequent to that and provided more accurate information. So we went through that in pretty detail with management on how to account for that and came to the conclusion that we correct this year, we changed that liability in the asset, and then we corrected last year's too to make the 2 years comparable. So you'll see that a $3.9 million decrease, part of that 30 million is that 3.9 decrease this year. Insurance contractual obligations also decreased about $100 million, mainly due to the ceding of obligations in two of the estates, which were I have them written down here, Colorado Bankers Life and Bankers Life Insurance. And the net position really is a fallout from all of those accounts there. Estate recoveries increased about 64 million, mainly due to recoveries from Friday Health, Bright Healthcare, and Colorado Bankers Life and Health. So there were some significant recoveries that we don't see too much in the past. We did see those this year, so you'll see that. You see that account increase year over year. No new assessments, Class A or Class B this year. And then Note 18 has been carried over for the year, so some of the overall obligations and ongoing claims by the association. So we can move on. So really, that's all I have. I'll give a quick status here, and then I'll open it up for questions. But we have everything goes through multiple reviews. I have reviewed everything. We are in the process of our second review. I don't anticipate any significant changes to the financial statements, if anything, typos and grammar and things like that. We did the matter I discussed about the $3.9 million change in last year's statements and this year's statements on those assets and liabilities. Bart and Jared did reach out early. That was a little unusual. We came up with how it should be accounted for under GASB 100 guidance. We went ahead and kicked that up and did a consultation with our national technical group just to make sure there's no surprises at the end. And they agreed this is how it should be accounted for. So that was really the biggest thing this year as far as maybe some uncertainty how it should be accounted for. So I feel comfortable that there's not going to be anything significant in those financials change in those financial statements that changed between now and the board meeting. But I will certainly reach out and brief that out if there are. But again, nothing significant new this year that would cause that. So
So, Bhakti, before presentation, and I think you were flowing pretty well, so he didn't stop you. But we were joined by Sean Martin with the Texas Department of Insurance. Sean, just want the record to show that you're in attendance. Thank you for joining us, sir. And then a quick comment from me on the $3.9 million adjustment that Bhakti mentioned. Because it was a little unique. First, this was in a process that we, the association, implemented several years ago. And this is to have an outside actuary review our estimates of our contractual obligations we develop, because there's several different methodologies used in doing that. And we wanted to make sure that any perceived management bias was not contained in those, and we thought using an outside actuary to look at those and say, were the methodologies used to develop those estimates of future contractual obligations a reasonable actuarial approach? And in the last few years, we've been getting a letter to that effect. This year, the actuary said that he had made an error in a prior estimate on one of the insolvencies. And the error was not in the reserve that he calculated and our adjustment to it, but in the allocation of the overall reserves among the affected states. So the Texas share had been overstated because that allocation among the states was inaccurate. Our number came down by 3.9 million. So the two things important there is a process we had implemented years ago, and in that process, the actuary had a small mistake. None of the mistake impacted any payments. We've not made payments on that specific transaction yet. That transaction is in process of being developed. We anticipate it will close sometime in the second quarter. So financially, no impact, just a reporting matter. Jarrett, did you have anything you wanted to add to that? Did I describe it properly?
No, I think you described it perfectly. I just want to say that if you want to look at it, it is note 17 in the notes to the financial statements, and you can take a look there and see how that was presented.
And Bhakti, I appreciate you letting me interrupt you there. So we're back to if anyone has questions of you.
It's interesting, this Frank. I had actually had that circled with some questions, and I think you've answered all the questions. So it qualifies as a prior period adjustment because the mistake was made in a calculation by a third party. Is that how that qualified as a prior period adjustment?
We went back and forth on that, on whether it's a prior period. It's not really a restatement. We're not restating that position in any way. So how GASB 100 describes it's a reclassification because we're not changing that position in any way. It doesn't change the opening net position. We've changed that, but we are changing the prior year financials because we're pulling 3.9 million out of the assets and the liabilities, or it might have been a little bit different number last year, Bart. I could be saying that wrong, but we pulled it out last year to make it comparable to this year. So GASB 100 calls it a reclassification as opposed to a prior period adjustment.
And
Gotcha.
Frank, because that's a reclassification, Bhakti does not have to go back and change her prior year's audit results, which means we don't have to change our prior year annual report and our submission to the commissioner. It's just disclosed in this year's financial statements. So it all boils down to a matter of disclosure. And I think we've done a pretty thorough job of doing that without getting too wordy in the footnote Jarrett mentioned.
Are we concerned at all that I mean, is this something we need to have an eye on going forward? Is there a potential reoccurrence of something like this?
No,
And listen, it's interesting. I have personally had to deal with this at a healthcare system level on these prior periods, some of these adjustments based on mistakes and estimates and so forth. And so, yeah, it can get kind of mind numbing, but what do we know going forward?
Well, here's what's, and you have to look at the unique perspective of the association. Now, a lot of times we post obligations based on the best available information. And of course, that information is coming out of the review of the records of an insolvent insurance company, which quite often aren't the best. So our estimates do have swings in them. This one was unique that our outside consultant made an error in assembling those numbers. That's not normal. It should be noted that consultant also is a consultant to the NOLGA task force that developed these numbers for everyone. So it closure. I don't anticipate, regular recurrence of this. We know that actuary very well. It's unusual to have an error, but it's also we don't bring in a second actuary to review that actuary's work. I mean, there's a point where you have to accept the professional's reports and his work. So, could it happen again? Yes, anything can happen. Do we anticipate it? No. So, a little unique situation here, and that made it kind of difficult. Gosh, how do we disclose this? We've never run into this before. And I think Bhakti and her team did a very thorough analysis and recommended this disclosure. Jarrett drafted it, and it's done.
Oh, looks
Mark,
fine.
oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, it just looks fine. Just fine. I was curious because of, again, we've had to deal with the GASB 100 adjustments and slash estimate error correction, and it's, like I said, it gets a little, you get cross-eyed looking at it, but understanding the process, and again, if it's a mistake from a third party, I mean, all you can do is still count on what they're providing for you. So, no, all good. That was the only question I had on the whole thing.
Correct. And
Bhakti?
we talked through that around the root cause, from a controls perspective. We asked the question, could management have identified this? Could they have caught this error? And without seeing all of the states, which I don't believe you have access to,
No.
there's no way you would have known that this calculation error existed. So we kind of went through that. Was it a control deficiency on the association side, or was it a fully third party false information or incorrect information, I should say, provided.
Familiar. Good stuff. Thank you.
Other questions of Bhakti? Then, Mark, I'll put this back up on screen and go back to the regular presentation. It's going to be back to you. Get this out of the way. And we might ask if Sean has any comments or questions from the Department of Insurance.
Yeah, why was traffic so bad on MOPAC this morning? That was my main question.
They saw
And
you coming.
because I left early and still got in a little bit late, but I apologize for that, everyone. Jan, welcome to the party. Look forward to working with you.
And Sean, you haven't missed much. So, Mark, if there's not
I
any other
saw you were
questions.
only on I saw you were only on item three, so I knew what the item one and two likely were, so I wasn't too upset. This is I wanted to hear the auditor talk, so we're good.
And Mark, we have left room here. In the packet, there is a resolution on 3-2 to recommend the audit report to the full board, but we have postponed the consideration of that until after executive session, just in case there's any confidential discussion of the audit that the board might want to do. So we recommend postponing taking action on this item until after executive session.
Yes, sir.
And I think at this point we can let Bhakti go. I'm sure she's really busy today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhakti. We will see you again on the 21st for the board meeting.
We will see you there.
All
Thank
right.
you,
Thank
everyone.
you. Thank you.
Have a great
Right.
day.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Bhakti.
Bhakti.
So, Mark, if you're ready, here's item four. Do you want me to explain it?
I think a little explanation. We've got some new folks on the committee, so.
Okay. Every excuse me, every year after we hear the audit report from the auditor, we always look to see is there anything in the findings, anything in the report that would say, okay, should we look at the development of the next year's audit to expand it in any way? And also look at the current activities of the association. Should next year's audit be expanded in any way? So we have two examples on screen where there have been expansions in the past. In 2007, when the audit was done for the year-end 2006 report, the association had been conducting and administering several blocks of business in-house, a long-term disability business, a major medical block of business, both billing and collection of premium and adjudication of claims in pretty good volume. So the board of directors, after a recommendation from the audit committee, there was an agreed upon procedure engagement with the auditor doing the financial audit to also look at the in-house adjudication of those claims and the processing of the premiums on those policies. And so that was one area that was looked at. It was just based on the unique circumstances of the association's then current activities. And then in 2018, in conjunction with the 2017 year-end financial audit, a consulting engagement was done with the auditor to do an enhanced internal control review of cash receipts, cash disbursements, and investment transactions. You know, how are those transactions conducted? What's the role of the various members of the association team? How are we communicating with those outside entities? And there were no findings there of anything that needed to be adjusted. So in the past, there have been these two expansions, one to look at in-house administration of blocks of business, and another to look at a specific area in the operations of the association dealing with the handling of funds, really. So we have talked about this in-house, your staff. Although we have a block of business in-house we've been administering a couple of years, it's from the Calanthe Mutual Life Insurance Company insolvency. These are very small face amount life insurance policies and very small premiums. If you can believe Jarrett bills and collects premiums, you may be looking at a few dollars a quarter for some policies. It's a very small volume. Because of that, we would suggest that this be on a future consideration by the committee, where the cost of doing an expanded review would be warranted, where the volume of claims and volume of premiums have grown somewhat. I will mention it was a very troubled block of business we took over, very poor records, and the way the entity was administering the business was completely outside of normal accepted practices. The association has kind of educated the policyholders and the claimants how to do this. We've had to implement a lot of unique documentation legally to implement some of the claims. And there have been absolutely no complaints. If there were significant issues I had identified in the administration, and yes, I sign off on the payments, but I don't do the administration. That's Topping and Jarrett and Brandy that do all this administration. If I'd identify anything, I would tell the board, you ought to have independent eyes look at this. I just do not feel it's warranted at this time. So that's my recommendation on expanding the scope of next year's audit.
Thank you, Bart. Jarrett, you got anything to add to that or?
The only thing I would add is just keep in mind if there is an expansion in the scope that will incur a separate engagement with separate fees. The fees that they propose to us includes only the financial audit. And I have to correct Bart on one thing. On the 2017 review, there was one adjustment. They recommended that we make a copy of the back of the check as along with the front of the check. And that
Thank
was
you.
the only adjustment.
Now that's a big one.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Dotting the I's and crossing the T's, I will call it, but we
Yeah.
do it. Thank you, Jared.
Bart, I'm just curious. I'm roughly familiar with the Kalante situation, understand what happened and y'all how y'all stepped in to help with that.
Yes.
How many of those policies are still active?
Shares about 1,700, is that correct?
Yes, we're about 1,700 total policies and somewhere around 250 to 300 premium paying policies.
And you know,
Okay.
Sean, that began at as a block of just under 3,000.
I'm familiar with what happened with that. So if there's any decisions about, auditing on that, we obviously we appreciate y'all keeping us in the loop on what's going on. So.
Absolutely. And anytime you want any insight and what's been going on that block, Sean, we'd be glad to sit and visit with you. We have good experience with it now, and I think we've done a pretty admirable job of administering a messy block. So
The insureds all seem to be happy. We're not hearing anything. So thank you.
okay, Mark, and that's all I have on that item unless the committee feels differently from my recommendation or wants more detail.
Frank or Blake, anything to add or any discussion?
You know that this is a very minor thing, and I hope it's maybe my print didn't work right. Are y'all's pages numbered in the audit? This is a very simple thing. Oh, so you've got, well, no, that's your
That's the material in the audit report.
yeah, the audit report.
No, they're not.
They not in the draft version. They will be in the final version.
Okay, very good. It's just okay, it's just my OCD maybe. I don't know. I just I gotta have audits that have page numbers.
No, it very much will be, and this is very much a draft that's sent to the committee for this
Okay. Thank you.
Beeman, I would ask you, please pay attention to the detail, okay? Please.
Yeah.
Anything else? Okay,
Not
Mark.
hearing anything, I guess we can move forward.
Okay, Chairman, the next item, and this is the way I do like to explain this because it sounds kind of confusing. We just talked about the scope of the 2026 audit. Well, that's the year-end 2026 financial information. Now we're talking about based on the findings of that were just presented by the auditor, is there anything on the current audit plan, the audit plan we're following for this calendar year, that the committee feels needs to be adjusted? And it was included in the packet. It's very detailed. It talks about what work is going to be done in the spring meeting of the audit committee and the fall meeting of the audit committee. And it talks about interactions with the auditor. It talks about the RFP that was conducted. So we, as your staff, did not hear anything in the audit that would warrant amending this audit plan we're currently following for this calendar year. But if there's anything you heard or anything you'd like to discuss, we'd be glad to go over that with you.
I have none.
Anyone else?
No, sir.
Not for me.
Okay. And Chair Williams, should I move on to item six?
Please.
This is going to be an item that has some sensitivity to it, so I will only introduce this item and make a record of our process. So, item six deals with the necessity for the association to issue an RFP to find a new auditor. As you're required, we are required that an auditor cannot serve for the association due to the annual financial audit for more than 7 years. It can be done earlier. We can change auditors, but we have to, at 7 years, change auditors. The incumbent audit firm is eligible to submit a proposal to conduct the audit, but they must rotate or change their audit partner. So, Jarrett drafted, I reviewed a request proposal that was sent out to 16 accounting firms the first week of November 2025. Specific firms were asked to submit their submission of notice of interest and any questions they might have about the process or the engagement. And then those firms were invited to attend a proposers conference on January 14th. And in that video conference, we went through any questions that have been asked. So must very consistently. So after that, proposals were due by March 10th, 2026, and there were multiple proposals At the advice of counsel, I will not disclose the number, but there were multiple proposals received. Those were distributed to the committee with an evaluation form. The committee then independently, each member of the committee provided their evaluations, sent those to Jarrett. Jarrett compiled those results, and a compilation was distributed to the committee. We will display that compilation during executive session, and we can have a thorough discussion of any questions of the proposals the committee might have. So we have a draft resolution that we will again ask that we postpone considering until after the executive session discussion. So questions about the RFP process?
Hearing no questions, Bart, I guess we can move on to number seven.
And number seven is a fairly unique item. It's an old item too. It stems from a possible claims exposure arising out of the 2000 liquidation of Reliance Insurance Company. I was here during all that. And I'll tell you, Reliance was one of the insurance company insolvencies that was caused by the 9/11 disaster. This company was housed in one of the Twin Towers. And so there was a host of missing records, destroyed records, and I won't say all of them, but almost all the records were able to be recreated by working through the reinsurers of this company. So they did have a program of any occupation, disability claims and disability protection. And these policies originally had been presented to us as being written by a surplus lines company. So our determination was none of the claims were covered by us. As we dug deeper and more records were restored from the reinsurers, we found out that was not the case. The policies were actually written by Alliance, and one claim had been submitted to the Reliance liquidator. The liquidator has a claim against the estate, and the liquidator denied the claim because there was a doctor's statement that the claimant was capable of providing performing any occupation, not their own occupation, but any occupation. So the claim was denied. We asked for the records from the claim records that had been submitted to the receiver, the liquidator, and Jackie Rickson, general counsel at the time, and I reviewed those, and we found conflicting doctor statements. We asked that those be confirmed. And we did find that, no, this person was definitely disabled from providing are performing any occupation. We contacted the claimant, asked them to submit a claim with the receiver, with the Guaranty Association, and we booked a potential $200,000 liability anticipating the claim. That's now been 23 years. This person never pursued the claim against the association. So we think we have recognized this potential liability for long enough, and we reviewed this with counsel, and he feels it's after this passage of time, it's appropriate to write off that potential obligation. So
Bart,
yes,
my most important question. I'm not familiar. Where was that receivership domiciled at?
Pennsylvania.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So there is a resolution on screen. It's also on page 7-2 of your materials, recommending to the board of directors that that $200,000 liability be written off.
Hey, Bart, quick question on that. Is there any policy in place or anything like that regarding these type of write-offs? Obviously, I would say obviously there's not if we've got something that's 23 years old, but should we have some type of adopted policy, maybe recommended by the auditors, of how long we carry these liabilities?
I'd ask counsel. Dan, could you say something about statute of limitations on a contractual claim?
Yes. So the statute of limitations is 4 years on a contractual claim, but it has to be based on presentation, right? So there's also a catch-all limitations that actually is on a Guaranty Association case that dealt with identifying by Guaranty Association of when that demand would be presented. and the limitations running from that date. So that case basically could push it out an extended period of time from what is considered first, the way the case is written is reasonable, meaning 4 years, and then having another 4 years. So that gets you up to eight. Okay. Then we also have to have the discovery and disclosure. So we can't really have a, we can have a guidance, but I wouldn't do a hard and fast rule. And especially in a situation that we've got, and this particular one is a great example. And on 9/11 catastrophes, less likely to occur, but this is a situation where it would take a considerable amount of time to get all that together. And if we had written off earlier, even within that 8 years, I don't think that would have been a good practice. I think that could have gotten us burned really quickly in the court, because somebody would have had to put together all the materials to get everything together, identify the claim.
And Frank, this one was unique in that rather than just carrying this potential obligation in our obligations report, where we would normally have each active insolvency and any potential obligations that we think would be a short-term or long-term obligation, we specifically posted an amount for one claim, one potential claim in our financials. That was not a standard practice. And it's just set there for the last, I guess it was posted in 2003 when we actually posted it. It's been there for 23 years. So this is not a standard practice. Normally, what we would take is any liabilities like this that we think we may have in an insolvency, we just put in that obligations report. So I don't
This
see
one
this
off.
coming up again. This is just cleaning up an old practice that should we have done it this way? It was a decision at the time. Let's just post it.
Well, it seems like a certainly seems like a an extreme one-off. I mean, like I said,
Yes.
likelihood of this again. So I agree. But I was curious. We on a just a side question, Dan. What's the record retention policy or requirement statute record for record retention?
From the statute,
Yeah, is there? Because I would imagine that if your record retention, any liability going beyond record retention, how does that work? You know, it would be, but again, this is a one-off, and I'm again
and
not
this is actually a
a
discussion
chase
that, so
rabbit.
this would be there is not a statute on that, right? This
Okay.
would be our policy, and this is actually part of the discussion Bart and I have had about how long should that record retention policy be in light of the cases I was describing, which would need to be beyond that 4 years.
And
Something like
Frank,
10
I'll
or
tell you,
12.
just to cut it a little bit short.
Yes, sir.
The association has a record retention policy that covers not only insolvency records, but also operational records. And it's been in place for a long time and it's outdated. I'm recommending some significant changes to it, but I can't put them before the board until I have counsel review them. So Dan is doing some research on them. Part of that is I also serve on the Security Advisory Council for NOLGA, and I recommended some changes there. And the committee has recommended changes on how NOLGA retains certain policy records on for the benefit. It's really their individual guarantee association records, but they're kept in the NOLGA servers. So we're making changes to a lot of the record retention. We have too many things in our current record retention policy that say permanent. And by keeping them permanent, it sounds great. They're kind of belt and suspenders, but it also significantly increases our cyber liability risks.
Exactly.
Because if there was a breach, we have all these records and our disclosure and notice requirements would be through the roof. So the retention, the entire record retention policy is something being revised. I'm hopeful that you see a recommended change before the end of this year.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. I guess it's just a thought.
Well, let me comment on the GASB side of this too. This is governed by GASB 65. And basically, it says you write off the liability when the debt is extinguished, and extinguished meaning either paid or legally defeased. So I think that points back to Dan's comments on when the legally that's no longer required for us to keep it.
So, Chairwoman Williams, there is a resolution on screen for you to consider.
Any more just so moved. Okay, thank you. And I can second that.
So
All in
that was
favor?
Beeman and Williams?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, resolution passes. Okay. All right. The time now is 9:46 a.m. on April 7th, 2026. And I am recessing the regular session of the Audit Committee meeting of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association in order for the committee to meet in the executive session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. All right. The time is 9:56 a.m. on April 7, 2026. The executive session of the Audit Committee of the meeting has concluded, and I am reconvening the regular session of the Audit Committee meeting pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. And on to item 9, I believe.
Yes, Chair Williams, you have two items, if I heard the discussion of the committee correctly, in executive session to consider. The first I'll put on the screen is a resolution to recommend acceptance of the 2025 financial audit to the board of directors.
So moved.
Seconded.
Thank you, gentlemen. All in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Resolution passes.
And the second item, Chair Williams, was the committee did discuss confidentially and identified unanimously a firm that it would be recommending to the board of directors that they be engaged to conduct the year-end 2026 audit. So the name of the firm will be withheld until after action by the board, but there is a resolution in as shown on screen for the committee to recommend a specific firm that will be named at a later date to the board of directors.
So move.
Second.
Excellent. All so, in favor?
Wait. Oh, Travis, a second on that. Yeah, go ahead without talking.
Yeah, it was talked over. Who was who? First and second?
I was first. And I think Blake and Frank tied for second.
So. Pick a name. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All righty. Sounds like Broderson made it just in time.
All righty. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Resolution passes, Bart.
Thank you, sir.
Looks like an item 10. Jarrett, you are up.
Jarrett, you want to do the lead in? You want me?
No, go ahead, Bart, and I'll cover the actual numbers.
Okay.
So this is an annual review we conduct every April with the audit committee. So Jarrett assembles the final actual expenses of the prior calendar year and compares those to what we had budgeted for the calendar year to look for specific variances. And then he will also describe how we allocate amounts between the fixed account, or the fixed cost and the variable cost, and then what portion of these expenses are eligible for recovery from the specific insolvencies. So, Jarrett, you want to, I can try to enlarge this just a little.
Yeah, apologize for the size of this. We're going to have to work on making that more readable.
All right, let's try this. If everyone can see that, and I'll just have to move it up and down as you identify items. Go right ahead.
So first of all, let's look at the overall at the bottom. We were $547,000 over our budget. And we have all those, each one of those accounts listed in the following material on what the budget variance is. But I'm going to hit a couple of them here that are kind of the bigger ones. So the first one is education and training, account number 5055. And we were pretty significantly over budget on that. And that really has a lot to do with we had more participation by board and staff in a lot of these meetings where the education and training happened, and along with council. The cost of the attendance of these meetings was a lot higher than we had originally budgeted. And we had actually reclassed some of the NOGA meeting expenses. If you look down a little further account 5111, you'll see that the NOLGA meetings was a little under budget because some of that was reclassed into the education and training. So that's why that one was over budget. The next item I want to talk about is compensated absences. That's part of our employee benefits. This is a new line item from GASB 101, I believe, where we have to now start accounting for staff absences or their accumulated leave time. And so it's now an expense. We did not have that incorporated in the budget when we adopted this GASB, so it will be included going forward. But just to know, it is still pretty difficult to estimate how much time off staff is going to take throughout the year. But we'll have a better estimate in the budget for 26.
Hey, Jeremy, real quick question on that. Is that not something that gets set up as an allowance throughout the year? I mean, walk me through that, because we, yeah, I mean, just should be in your benefits, right? Should there be a liability set up for that?
Yes, there is a liability. So on this, you have on the balance sheet side, you'll have a liability set up for our estimate of the leave time. And then we set up a there's an expense. And so each month as that liability changes, then that expense will either be a positive or negative based on the change. You kind of think about it. The employee will accrue time throughout the year, but they're also using time throughout the year. So that change will be a plus or minus depending on how much they've used versus how much they've accrued.
Okay.
I attribute this item to the wisdom of GASB. Okay. Read into that what you
And for larger organizations, this would be a very significant number. We actually, our auditor said that we probably didn't even need to bother booking this because of the materiality of it, but the committee at the time wanted to go ahead and include it.
Sorry, Jarrett, national assessments. That's
National assessments,
significant.
that really is our big one. That's the one that always gives us trouble because we are trying to estimate how much these insolvencies are going to cost, how much Texas's piece of those insolvencies are going to be. And if we have any solvencies at all. So this one is always the one, and this accounts for most of the variance in the overall budget. But we have now adjusted this budget item going forward to try to get a little bit closer to the actual and try to get more information out of NOLGA on some of these estimates. But that's always our big one going forward.
Let me add to that. So Jarrett says insolvency, some of these are rehabilitations as well. So anytime the national assessments, those are our members participation council fees and assessments that we get quarterly. They're always included in as a consent item at the beginning of each board meeting. These are the costs of the task forces to do the work, to churn the butter, to identify the issues, develop resolutions, and recommend the solutions. And we had with Global Bankers, I'm sorry, the Bankers Life and Colorado Bankers, significant activities and a lot of work last year as the system paid out about $1.4 billion in annuity and life claims during the year. And it was just the volume was through the roof. So a lot of cost to manage that process. We also had a couple of new rehabilitations I can't mention publicly that we're tracking and beginning to do research and work on them to prepare. It appears at least one of those rehabilitation is not going to be successful. It's going to be moving toward liquidation. So the preparation work on that one ramped up quite a bit, and the task forces incurred more expenses, and those were passed along to us. So this is always an item that is substantial, and Jarrett will talk a little bit later, but it's one of the expenses we do try to recover in the receiverships. Go ahead, Jarrett.
Okay, so the last account I want to look at is the very last one, and that's our interest expense. Based on committee instructions, prior committee instructions, we have taken out the interest expense that's associated with buying new investments, and we net that against interest income. So this account really comprised of our GASB 87, which is our lease. There's an interest component to that lease that we recognize each month. that's a known number. So that one is not really included or not part of this variance. The variance really comes from the other part of this is our intercompany loans. And so we have the process. If an estate does not have the funds to pay its expenses, we will borrow from either the insolvency expense account or another estate, and we do an intercompany loan and we charge an interest on that interest component. And so we have to try to estimate how much that's going to be throughout the year. And of course, it's really hard to estimate how much an insolvency is going to cost. So that interest component is really hard to estimate. So there's our difference there. We were actually had a lot less intercompany borrowing than we anticipated. So between that interest component and our national assessments, that is really our biggest pieces of our variance. And both of those are things that the Guaranty Association really can't control and really doesn't have a good method to estimate. So that's all I wanted to talk about specifically on this. If there are any other questions on the actual variance. All right, so other parts of this report, we have the variable cost and the fixed cost. Fixed costs are going to be the cost that the association is going to incur, whether we do anything or not. And then the variable costs are going to be the ones that are really kind of associated with insolvency activity. As insolvency activity goes up and down, then our variable costs will go up and down on that. So we kind of try to break that out between those two to see, if we look at the actual fixed cost, the variance between the budgeted and the actual fixed cost, is there something the Guaranty Association can control? And you'll see that that variance is actually very small. The biggest part of the variance is in the variable cost, which is the parts that the Guaranty Association really can't control. Any questions on that? And then the last piece is our allocation. So we allocate these expenses based on the time we spend working on these insolvencies. And the general expense allocation column goes to our general expenses and are usually covered by Class A expenses or Class A monies. And then the insolvent allocation, we file proofs of claim and hope to get recoveries on that. And down at the bottom, at the very far right corner, you'll see that we've allocated roughly 55% of our expenses to insolvencies that we hope to get recoveries on. So that's actually a pretty high number compared to historical data. Usually that number is somewhere around 20 to 30%. That just goes to show that we've been spending a lot of time on these various insolvencies. Any question on that? All right, that's all I have on our variance report.
Thank you, Jarrett.
Bart, I had a question.
Yes.
Is this sheet included in the board materials that you forwarded last
Yes, it
week?
is. Yes, it
Yes.
is.
Okay, I'll look at it. I do note it doesn't look like your lawyer's working very hard. That's the first thing that I noted.
No, they
So,
work hard. It's just we don't pay them.
we just don't
Oh.
pay them. Yeah.
Okay, well, that works for me. Good
Yeah,
deal.
we have a cheaper option now. So.
All right. Any other questions? All right, Mark, let me spin past the descriptions
All
and we'll get on
righty.
to this item. Your last item today.
Calendar of activities.
So the calendar of activities is included in your material, and then after each meeting, I always update it and post a new calendar activity for the board in total, then for each committee on your board portal. You could always look at that, or you could ask me, I can send it to you. But based on what we project of your next meeting, you can see the four bullets here. At your next meeting, which will be in the fall, you've got the audit plan for 2027 to review that we will develop and review, has to be approved and then filed with the commissioner. Annually, we ask each committee to review its charter to see if there's anything in the charter that should be amended. Every October, we review the commercial insurance program the association has, which really for its operations, different aspects to let you see what those coverages are and what those costs of those coverages are. And then we go through and say, okay, we're working up the 2027 operating and capital expenditure budgets. And here's what we're anticipating. So you can see kind of a precursor. Here's what's going to be included in the budget Is there anything we've missed, or is there anything significant that we are anticipating a swing in those budgets? So those are the items that will be on your next committee meeting. We have targeted October 12th as the next date. I should note that is Columbus Day. If there is a concern for anyone, or you'd like to celebrate Columbus Day, we've identified October 26th, 2 weeks later, as a tentative date. That is the day before the board meeting. That board meeting will on the 27th would be in person. So we think that the 26th would be a travel day for everyone, or for several people will be attending the meeting. We could do that meeting late in the day, or we could find another date. So here are your options. 12th, do it on Columbus Day virtually. Do it on the 26th late in the day, or do it in some time between the 12th and the 26th. I haven't mentioned much about that in between period because it is jam-packed. October is a very full month.
I'm easy, truly. It doesn't matter to me. We can come in because you're right. It's a travel day. We could come in if we could meet. Are you suggesting that on that Monday having or late in the day in-person meeting in the office, or still make it virtual?
If you don't want to meet on Columbus Day, we could do a meeting on the 26th and do it at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the evening. Because if you look at these items, this is a brief meeting. It's not a heavy agenda. So it's only if the 12th does not work for you, we could move to the 26th and schedule it late in the day.
12th works for me.
12th works for me.
12th works fine for me.
Then we will leave it on Columbus Day. And you can look in material, but here is the calendar activities. Review at your leisure. Of course, I will be filling in more of the dates that have been completed. And that's all we have for you today, Chair Williams. It's up to you.
Okay. Any other business that needs to come before the committee?
Not for me.
Not for me.
Okay. Well, then the time is, looks like, 10:13 a.m. on April 7, 2026, and this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association that has been held pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, is now adjourned.
Yeah.